COVID, 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 he's complaining. He's jealous of COVID's media coverage.
A former U.S. president attacking the current U.S. president. I'm Ira Melman, and we'll examine the role and effectiveness of surrogates campaigning as the election nears. Remember, you can find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also coming up on today's program, further reports and conversation on the U.S. election, now just days away on today's VOA Asia. Days before the November 3rd election, the campaigns of President Donald Trump and Democratic nominee Joe Biden are making their last pitch to voters, sending high-profile surrogates, including former President Barack Obama and the Trump family children. White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Swara has the story.
Former President Barack Obama has been traveling across the country campaigning for his former Vice President Joe Biden.
Are you ready to go?
His role? To throw verbal punches at President Donald Trump.
What's his closing argument? That people are too focused on COVID. He said this at one of his rallies. COVID, 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 he's complaining. He's jealous of COVID's media coverage.
With his ridicule, Obama plays the role of attack dog for Biden, who has been campaigning on a message of unity.
We're going to heal our nation.
Presenting himself as a national healer for a divided country.
Normally, that's a strategy that's reserved for the vice presidential nominee. But when you have someone who's as good an attack dog as Barack Obama and who seems more than willing to play that role, since he is more popular and better known than Kamala Harris, it's a reasonable judgment call.
The last Republican president, George W. Bush, has not campaigned for Trump.
First, let us remember we have faced times of testing before. Following 9/11, I saw a great nation rise as one to honor the brave, to grieve with the grieving, and to embrace unavoidable new duties.
In May, Bush released a video message of unity amid the pandemic. Trump responded with a tweet criticizing the former president for not speaking up during his impeachment. His campaign is relying instead on the president's adult children, Don Jr., Eric, Tiffany, and Ivanka Trump.
Some of you were probably Democrats not too long ago, but you don't recognize what the party has become. Their platform lays out a plan to transform America into a socialist country.
He doesn't have the type of loyalty outside of his family, and the family has gained a great deal of prominence during these years. And it seems that many in his base really like to see his son and his daughter out there.
The candidate's spouses are also deployed. Jill Biden has been active on the campaign trail.
When Joe is president, you won't read the news shaking your head with tense shoulders.
Meanwhile, First Lady Melania Trump made her first solo campaign appearance on Tuesday after recovering from COVID-19.
Thank you for all the love and support you gave us when our family was diagnosed with COVID-19.
Obama will join Biden in the critical swing state of Michigan on Saturday. Trump will campaign Friday in Michigan, Wisconsin, and Minnesota, with Republican candidates vying for a Senate seat. Patsy Whitaker-Swara, VOA News.
Patsy Whitaker-Swara is standing by. We'll talk with her about the election, campaigning, and what it means to Asia and the rest of the world. These are some of the top stories you'll see on voanews.com. A typhoon kills at least 35 and leaves dozens missing in Vietnam. Secretary of State Pompeo describes China as the greatest threat to the future of religious freedom. The FBI arrests 5 people in China's Operation Fox Hunt. An Afghan national is arrested in the 2008 kidnapping of a U.S. journalist and 2 others. And a company in Singapore has developed a breathalyzer test for the new coronavirus, which it says will enable people to know whether they're infected in under a minute. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. As promised, joining us is VOA White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Swara. Patsy, we just heard your report. I want to focus in a little bit on foreign policy as far as this election is concerned, maybe pointing toward Asia. Overall, what's the situation as far as foreign policy? It seems to me that it's fallen into a secondary role with the pandemic going on.
Yes, that's correct. And that's common with every election, right? I mean, most elections are about domestic politics. Foreign policy is number X. It's really not on the top of most voters' minds unless we're in a war. And so in particular, in this 2020 election, of course, the focus is on the pandemic and there's not been much discussion on foreign policy. However, we can take away just kind of the overarching difference between the two candidates is that while President Trump really emphasizes on America first, what the Biden campaign has been signaling is that they don't want America alone. So they will try to build back those old alliances, you know, rejoining the TPP, for example, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, extending multilateral cooperation with ASEAN and the ASEAN Regional Forum and so on, and APEC. And to really just remind the region in Asia Pacific that the U.S. considers this an important region, you know, kind of like a back to a pivot to Asia that the Obama administration tried to do. So there'll be more of that. There'll be more emphasis on multilateral cooperation and alliances in the region.
President Trump, through his Secretary of State Mike Pompeo over the past few days, has been bringing an anti-China message to Sri Lanka and Maldives and now Indonesia, a very heavily placed an anti-Chinese message. How does this affect world affairs, do you think?
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, if we look at U.S. relations with other countries, and it's not just Asia, we look at this in Latin America, for example, in Africa, everything has been framed in a sort of competition with China context, right? And so if we look at the differences between the two candidates, it's actually quite similar. There are similarities between the Trump foreign policy towards China, as well as what the Biden administration say that the foreign policy will be. In terms of trade, for example, both Trump and Biden have repeatedly criticized China's unfair trade practices. On human rights, both Trump and Biden have condemned Chinese actions in Hong Kong and Xinjiang and Tibet and the Uyghurs. In the South China Sea, both candidates are also declaring that China's expansion in terms of maritime claims there to be illegal and they want it to stop. On technology, it's also the same. You know, they've condemned Chinese technology transfer and what they call intellectual property theft from U.S. companies. Remember the case of Huawei and so on. But the key difference is, again, the principle of whether the U.S. wants to go at it alone, which is has been sort of the operating principle from the Trump administration, or do we want to bring allies to put pressure multilaterally to China, as well as, for example, North Korea. I think that is the key difference in terms of approach. But as far as what analysts have told me, what both Republicans and Democratic strategists have told me, in terms of interests and in goals, it's quite similar.
VOA White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Swearup will continue our conversation about the election and Asia and the rest of the world in just a moment. Stay with us. Happening now in Asia, Chinese and U.S. military chiefs held talks on crisis communication this week amid heightened tensions between the two military superpowers this year in the South China Sea, with the United States denying a report on a possible drone attack. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. This is VOA Asia. We continue now our conversation with VOA White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Swearup. What has the campaign done as far as trying to get an Asian American vote?
So both the Trump campaign and the Biden campaign have tried to reach out to Asian American voters. They've done outreach. I do feel that the Biden campaign has made more of an effort. Although President Trump consistently says that he is the president that will be good to all minorities in the U.S. because he is the one who will be able to bring back the economy roaring back to its pre-pandemic stage, which lifts up everybody, including minorities. But in terms of specific outreach, both campaigns are doing it. I do see that the Biden campaign are doing it more in terms of Asian Americans and other minorities.
And from what you know, where does the Asian American population stand as far as their choice for the next president?
Yeah, so Asian Americans are really interesting. They're really the fastest growing segment of voters in compared to other racial ethnic groups in the U.S. There's about 11 or 12 million Asian Americans who will be able to vote this year. That's about 5% of the electorate. And in terms of their ideology, where they tend to lean to vote, that really varies by origin group. You know, for example, Vietnamese Americans are more likely to identify as Republicans. Indian Americans are most likely to identify as Democrats. And of course, it also doesn't just depend on where they come from or their ethnic background, but also where they live. And of course, it also doesn't just depend on the ethnic group that they're from, but also where they live, right? Do they live in a red state or in a blue state? All of that, of course, affects how Asian Americans vote.
Patsy Whitaker-Swera is the VOA White House correspondent. Patsy, thank you so much for being with us on VOA Asia.
Thank you. My pleasure.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news, information, and great features.
This news from VOA Asia. Myanmar's civilian leader Aung San Suu Kyi cast her ballot Thursday ahead of Election Day next week, with hundreds of thousands of elderly voters across the country expected to follow suit to reduce the risk of the coronavirus. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. U.S. military veterans tend to vote Republican in presidential elections, and a majority will likely do so again this year. But VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb reports some polls suggest that the president's traditional advantage among veterans may be eroding.
A recent Military Times poll shows 52% of veterans plan to back President Donald Trump this election.
I think a lot of people are looking at President Trump and saying, I can vote for him for the simple fact that promises made, promises kept.
Fifth-generation combat vet Jeff Jordan, who served in Iraq and Afghanistan, applauds Trump's Afghanistan troop reduction and peace negotiations with the Taliban.
I think at this point, the right thing to do is pull back, because, look, we've been in Afghanistan nearly 20 years. What do we have to show for that?
Not only has Jordan thrown his support to Trump, he decided to run for Congress.
The veteran community is important to me.
A big part of his platform is outreach to older veterans, like Vietnam vet and Trump supporter Curtis Herrick.
If you believe he's a nasty personality, and don't think about all the rest, you might throw the baby out with the bathwater, because he's really getting things done.
Herrick says he values Trump's decision-making skills.
He works about 20 hours a day, and he decides really quickly. When President Obama had the first surge, he anguished for 9 months before he'd make the decision.
But about 42% of veterans polled said that by November 3rd, they will have voted for Trump's Democratic challenger, former Vice President Joe Biden. That includes longtime Republican and Marine vet Jim Naylor.
I've never voted Democrat.
Who voted for Trump in 2016.
It was a big regret after that. I felt dirty about it.
Hi, my name is Jim.
Naylor created a viral video for the group Republican Voters Against Trump in 2020 after Trump criticized veterans and service members, including the late Senator John McCain, Trump's former Defense Secretary Jim Mattis, and Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman, who testified against Trump on Ukraine during impeachment proceedings. Naylor also said Trump's troop pullout from Syria last October dishonored the military.
He didn't send them home. He sent them just to countries, to his quote, that are paying for us to be there. He sent them to Saudi Arabia because Saudi Arabia pays. That seems so antithetical to what we go out there to fight for. We're not mercenaries. We don't fight for the highest bidder. We fight for what's right.
Nearly two-thirds of female vets polled by the Military Times disapprove of Trump's presidency.
This is a hat for my first ship.
As a former ship navigator, Navy vet Lauren Sims compares Trump's handling of the coronavirus pandemic to steering a ship through a storm.
Donald Trump's job is to set a course for our country and make course corrections in terms of this pandemic and fighting it, and he hasn't. He hasn't set a course, let alone corrections, and it's really scary. I truly believe that Joe Biden is a person that will do that.
Much like undecided voters in the general population, a small percent of veterans polled are split between third-party candidates or sitting out the election.
My choices, in my view, are either cyanide or, you know, arsenic.
Iraq War veteran Josh Hill voted third party last time in protest, and once again does not like any of the choices. Carla Babb, VOA News, Washington.
There is no current evidence that dogs can be infected. Hand washing after contact with all animals is recommended. This protects against other bacteria, such as E. coli and Salmonella, that can pass between animals and humans. For more information, visit www.who.int or www.cdc.gov.
Now on VOA Asia, the U.S. Supreme Court extended mail-in voting deadlines in the key battleground states of Pennsylvania and North Carolina, a setback for the Trump campaign. Brian Wood reports.
The U.S. Supreme Court dealt setbacks to Republicans Wednesday, allowing mail-in ballot deadline extensions in Pennsylvania and North Carolina. Both states are pivotal to President Donald Trump's re-election chances, particularly Pennsylvania, where Trump won in 2016. But is now trailing Democratic challenger Joe Biden in several opinion polls. The conservative majority court rejected the Pennsylvania Republican Party's request to block the state's deadline extension for receiving mail-in ballots. The action leaves in place a lower court's ruling. Mail-in ballots there will be counted as long as they are received up to 3 days after the November 3rd election. The Supreme Court also rejected the Trump campaign's request to block North Carolina's mail-in ballot extension, which allows votes to be counted up to 9 days after November 3rd. Trump's latest Supreme Court appointee, Amy Coney Barrett, did not participate in either case. According to a court spokeswoman, she did not have enough time to review the case filings. The Pennsylvania and North Carolina disputes are among a number of election-related lawsuits across the country. Trump has made unfounded claims that voting by mail leads to fraud, something experts say is exceptionally rare. But many states have expanded mail-in voting this year due to the health crisis, with voters wary of crowded polling places.
That was Reuters correspondent Brian Wood. Russians are tuning out the U.S. presidential election this year, unlike in 2016 when they followed it closely because the Kremlin presented the vote as a stark choice between warmer ties under President Trump or growing hostilities under then-Democratic challenger Hillary Clinton. Charles Means is in Moscow explaining why the difference is this year.
It was in November just over 4 years ago that Russians welcomed the election of Donald Trump by partying late into the night, all amid a sense promoted by candidate Trump and the Kremlin that a Trump victory would be a win for U.S.-Russian relations as well.
I think it would be great if we got along with Russia.
But Russia watchers say that optimism is sorely lacking from the 2020 race this time around.
I'm sure the Kremlin, unlike the broad public, is watching very closely and analyzing and thinking what this might mean for Russia. But it does not want to create expectations.
Trump's promises to rejuvenate the U.S.-Russian relationship never fully materialized. Early efforts to build dialogue, argue Kremlin officials, were soon hijacked by a federal investigation into Russian interference in the 2016 U.S. elections.
He is the subject of an ongoing...
Official Washington's conclusion was that Russia tried to sway the race in Trump's favor, charges both the president and the Kremlin deny. But a raft of U.S. sanctions against Russia over the 2016 election and other issues left Kremlin officials with few illusions about Trump's ability to steer the relationship on his own, say some analysts.
They understand that though President of the United States is a very influential figure in American politics, he is not an American czar.
They never come back.
The result, a more subdued Russian take on the 2020 race, as Trump and his Democratic opponent, former Vice President Joe Biden, battle for the White House. Attention to the campaign on the street and in the press has been minimal. Polls show nearly two-thirds of Russians have no candidate preference. Many are tuned out or disappointed.
I don't expect anything anymore because I really had hopes Trump could change things.
While a majority, say pollsters, know little about Biden.
I don't know anything about him. I haven't even heard anything about him.
President Putin certainly has. He's criticized the former vice president for engaging in anti-Russian rhetoric on the campaign trail, even as some U.S. intelligence officials warn the Kremlin may again be looking to meddle in the election. But with Biden currently leading in most polls, Putin insists he looks forward to working with whoever wins the White House. It's a safely diplomatic statement and a tacit admission. Whether Trump wins a second term or there's an incoming Biden administration, the hangover from the 2016 race may well linger over U.S.-Russian relations for a long time to come. Charles Maines for VOA News, Moscow.
VOA Asia continues. The CEOs of Facebook, Google, and Twitter testified before a Senate committee hearing Wednesday, just days before the U.S. election. Tina Trin reports.
The worlds of big tech in Washington converged on Wednesday as the CEOs of Twitter, Google, and Facebook appeared virtually before a U.S. Senate committee.
We welcome our panel.
The lawmakers called the hearing to discuss a U.S. law that shields tech firms from legal liability for speech posted on their sites. It was really an occasion to air a host of complaints about the firm's recent decisions. Some Republican senators argued that tech companies were acting arbitrarily by blocking or labeling conservative content. Roger Wicker is a Republican senator from Mississippi.
But the fact that selective censorship is occurring in the midst of the 2020 election cycle dramatically amplifies the power wielded by Facebook and Twitter.
Democrats question Republicans' timing of the hearing, with the U.S. election less than a week away. Richard Blumenthal is a Democratic senator from Connecticut.
They seem to want to bully and browbeat the platforms here to try to tilt them toward President Trump's favor.
For its part, Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey pointed to efforts to give users some control over the algorithms that determine what content they see.
We took a first step in making this more transparent by building a button to turn off our home timeline algorithms, enabling people to choose algorithms created by third parties to rank and filter their content. Is an incredibly energizing idea that's in reach.
Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg seemed to welcome outside intervention on determining the limits of online speech.
When a private company is making these calls, we need a more accountable process that people feel is legitimate and that gives platforms certainty.
Alexandra Givens of the Center for Democracy and Technology says the government is limited in what it can tell tech companies they can do around speech on their sites.
Under our Constitution, the government can't tell Facebook, you need to take down this awful but lawful speech. But a platform like Facebook can make that decision. What we really need to be focusing on is how platforms are using their power responsibly.
Considering the massive reach and influence of these tech giants, some experts contend that lawmakers shouldn't lose sight of the bigger picture. Eric Goldman is a professor of law at Santa Clara University.
Where the real accountability might come is through antitrust law or privacy law, that these are ways of regulating the internet company's behavior on topics that don't directly relate to the speech.
With the U.S. election just days away, the hearing underscored one thing, the critical role that internet firms play today. Tina Trin, VOA News, New York.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. Thank you for being with us. Thanks to our managing editor, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and Doug Bernard. I am Ira Melman in Washington. Please stay safe and enjoy the day ahead.